As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake Doctor's Orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Live Sportsnet Radio Network, Ben Ennis alongside Jeff Simmons, Gare Joyce. Happy weekend to you. Lots to get to today, and we will get to the Blue Jays and Toronto Maple Leafs coming up in the second hour of this program, also into week two of the NFL season. But we begin with the National Hockey League and training camps opening up. First preseason games on the horizon, and beginning of the regular season also on the horizon. Gents, There's a lot of storylines headed into this year, but I think maybe none bigger than this once-in-a-generation prospect entering the league with as much hype, maybe more hype than Sidney Crosby did when he first laced him up in Pittsburgh. Connor McDavid, he's expected to change the fortunes of the Edmonton Oilers, and they've already got a couple of high draft picks that were expected to change the fortunes of that organization. I know it feels like this is a slam dunk, Gare. He's never played a game, though. The hype is similar, equal, greater than Sidney Crosby, and the expectations are what? Playoff, Stanley Cup, like this year?
Well, I think this year is that's a little much, but if you go back to when Crosby came into the league in 2005, and I can go there. I wrote a biography of Crosby before the 2005 season. Crosby came into the league essentially with the same level of expectation as McDavid. I think maybe even with McDavid, it's a little higher. In terms of winning or impact as far as winning and losing goes, I think it's an awful lot to ask McDavid to carry the Oilers into the playoffs. It's possible. It's possible he could be in the top three or five in scoring this season with Taylor Hall out there. And I think he's pretty well emotionally suited for that role, to be the face of the franchise in Edmonton.
He has emotions? Because it doesn't seem like he does. Like he puts me to sleep every time I hear him talk.
More than Sidney?
Well, maybe it's along the same line. I think, actually, yeah, more than Sidney.
No, McDavid has a better sense of humor, I think.
Okay.
But, he's a very soft-spoken kid, He talks to his shoes a lot, mm-hmm. But I think the talent, I know all kinds of NHL scouts who will say it off the record. They won't attach their name to it, that he at this stage is farther ahead of Crosby at 18, no doubt.
Which is crazy to say.
I heard the same thing. Obviously not from the best source. It was from some Erie people. But they thought this guy is just as good as Crosby. And now he's playing in a Canadian city, and that's a big part of the hype he's getting. See, Crosby went to Pittsburgh out of the lockout. That was obviously a huge deal. But playing in Edmonton, where they've been bad for so long, and they were such a proud franchise in the 80s, and now you get this guy who can really change the fortunes of that team because they've been just going nowhere, and it's been hard to watch. But
And McDavid's going to be appointment viewing this year.
Yeah,
and Crosby really wasn't in 2005, right?
Not to the average Canadian fan, maybe not.
No.
Wasn't he? Like I feel like he was. He was not appointment viewing in 2005. I mean, there was so much hype, and the number of points he scored in the queue and the World Juniors and all that. I mean,
so you tuned into Pittsburgh Tampa back in 2005?
Well, possibly.
If you could find it.
That's right.
I mean, now it's all out there.
Okay, so that might be part of it, is the availability of some of these games. But why is this any different? Because, like I mentioned, there are skilled players on that Edmonton Oilers team, and there were skilled players on that team last year. The defense was porous. The goaltending was horrific. Why is this any different, Jeff?
I think people have more attachment to the Oilers. Pittsburgh was kind of an unknown back then, and you didn't really have any you've kind of seen them falter with all those high draft picks, and they've kind of become a laughingstock. Now you really want to see how what he does with this team, because without McDavid, they've really struggled.
You look at it, I mean, McDavid has the benefit of coming in and having Taylor Hall on his wing, right? I mean, now Taylor Hall would have made an NHL second All-Star team if somehow the NHL writers didn't vote Alex Ovechkin into two.
They figured out what position he plays.
Yeah, that's right. So Taylor Hall is not just a great talent, but he's a talent that's really well suited to playing with McDavid. I mean, the two of them might be among the league's five fastest skaters, right? They will just come with speed. It's going to be great entertainment.
Well, and we're going to talk about the Maple Leafs in the second half of this this program, and I'm going to say that there's never been a Maple Leafs team with as little pressure on it as the 2015-2016 version. I don't think there's the same scenario to be said about the Edmonton Oilers, Gear. I think, and we're coming off seasons in which they were similarly placed as far as the standings are concerned. There's a build that was supposed to be, you know, we're supposed to see incremental steps, maybe not huge steps. They haven't taken them yet. And now we're supposed to look at this one player. Like, if you put Connor McDavid on the 2014-2015 edition of the Edmonton Oilers, are they that much better? Are they a playoff team?
Maybe. Maybe. I mean, I think what's interesting in Edmonton is it's not just that McDavid's coming in, but there is a culture change there, mm-hmm. right? And going from top down, from Chiarelli to McClellan. And the thing is, I mean, I don't think I'm speaking out of turn here, but the Oilers management was just an unbridled disaster for so many years.
Old boys club.
You know what? They would take people out of there. They would make firings, but they just kept the wrong people, right?
If you played for the team,
yeah,
you got those jobs.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, that's broken now. Mostly, if any of those bodies are still around, they're marginalized, and Chiarelli would only come in a situation like that. And I mean, I think that really speaks to the impact of McDavid, is the fact that Chiarelli would take the job in Edmonton, given how bad Edmonton was. Once they've secured the rights to take McDavid in the lottery, then Chiarelli comes in.
And Todd McClellan, too. He was a pretty
absolutely.
Highly touted coach on the market, and he took that job quick.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, McDavid's impact just isn't on the ice, right? And, you know, that's even beyond what impact that Crosby had in 2005.
Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network, Ben Ennis, Jeff Simmons, and Gare Joyce. NHL training camps now open and underway. Yes, Connor McDavid's going to get a lot of the attention. As far as Leaf fans are concerned, looking at a player outside of the city of Toronto and getting a handle on what he's going to do this upcoming season, Phil Kessel will be a lightning rod in what he does in Pittsburgh. Because people are calling for, you know, if he scores fewer than 50 goals, my goodness, that would be surprising, even though he's never scored 40 in his career. But he's going to be playing alongside Sidney Crosby, at least to start, and boy, if you're looking for a facilitator, probably none better than Sidney Crosby. And it's training camp, so you can't have the conversation about a player looking for a bounce back year without mentioning that he's in the best shape of his life.
No one ever says that.
Nobody ever says it. And he was working out, apparently, though, with Gary Roberts in the offseason. Jeff, like, is this as perfect a situation for Phil Kessel as we've been led to believe this offseason?
You have to think so. When you go from Tyler Bozak to Phil Kessel, to Sidney Crosby's your line mate, you can't really find a bigger upgrade than that. And you've seen what Crosby's done for his wingers in the past, and he got Chris Kunitz on the Olympic team.
Yeah, which is incredible.
Yeah. And when you put a guy like Kessel, who's just such a natural goal scorer, on his wing, and it's really the perfect situation. The pressure's off. He's not the guy. That's Crosby. There's Malkin there. He can just go do his own thing, get out of the spotlight, and it's perfect for him. There's not all these media going to be in his face every day, and now you're just playing with one of the best facilitators in the NHL, and like, he couldn't have asked for anything better.
I keep thinking that you know, going to Pittsburgh and Kessel saying he's in the best shape of his life. I mean, essentially, he's been shamed into working out in the offseason, not just by the trade, but by you know, the presence of Sidney Crosby. Like, it, you know, Crosby's work ethic might be bigger than anyone else's in the NHL, to the point of almost being obsessive about it. You know, could Kessel go in, you know, showing up, having skated, you know, bragging about, oh, you know, I skated like 6 times in the off season, right? I golfed for fitness. He couldn't really go in and say that.
Because that was the storyline when the team was lousy, that was the storyline surrounding Phil Kessel. When he was scoring and they were reasonably good, it kind of disappeared and went away. Was it overblown though, Gare? Like, is there really a work ethic problem for Phil Kessel?
In a word, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, absolutely no doubt. The talent's never questioned.
Yeah.
But, you know, in terms of putting in work that other NHLers have put in, excuse me, you know, he would be in the bottom 5%. There really aren't NHLers that put in less work than him.
So we should...
It's just not professional at this point.
He's the first of like 100 stories, like I mentioned, where everybody's in the best shape of their life because, you know, optimism runs high in every sport in preseason. Is there a reason to believe that there's some significant change that's happened with Phil Kessel? Because, I mean, you mentioned it. You're talking about a dichotomy of work ethic where Sidney Crosby's on the high end and Phil Kessel's on the low end. I mean, there's a possibility if Phil Kessel went into camp like he did for Maple Leaf camp that Sidney Crosby would just wring his neck day one of camp. If there hasn't been this renewed dedication to work ethic from Phil Kessel, could this go sideways in a hurry?
I think politically, socially, you know, in within the culture of the dressing room, if Phil Kessel showed up, you know, less ready to play in Pittsburgh, I mean, there would be real issues inside the room. Going to Pittsburgh for Phil Kessel is sort of like he's been traded to Moscow Red Army in 1975, right? Like you have to get with the program, and he's with the program.
But he's generally well liked within a locker room, is he not? Like the players, the Maple Leaf players, seemed to like him, didn't they? They thought he was like a funny mercurial type of guy. But I don't know. Was it a move made by the Maple Leafs brass to extract him from the situation because they didn't want that type of attitude filtering down to the other players, or was it because the players in that dressing room didn't like him? Because it always seemed that the players liked him. I don't know. Is he really going to have a difficult time getting along with Sidney Crosby?
Well, what you said is that was a big part of the issue for the Leafs and for Brendan Shanahan. The players really did like him, and they looked up to him because he was so talented and such a good scorer. And their view was, if this is the attitude and this is the tone we're setting for this new rebuilding program, we can't have this around. That's why they traded him for even not a very impressive return.
Yeah.
So in Pittsburgh, there's guys you got to answer the bell to, and that's why a guy like Crosby is so important. That in Toronto, you didn't really have that.
And I would say that, you know, he did get along and had good relationships with various Leaf players. That's not that hasn't necessarily been his history before in Boston and in other stops before he made the NHL.
Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network, Ben Ennis alongside Gare Joyce and Jeff Simmons. So one of the storylines that's now a storyline, I feel like it had been a while since we talked about Josh Hosang. He was a topic of conversation at the draft, that the Islanders took him where he did. You know, his interviews or lack thereof with teams pre-draft were the topic of many discussions. There was a whole racial aspect of the whole thing. And there was the talk of maybe an attitude problem there. How about day one of training camp, you show up late and sent immediately back to junior in the Ontario Hockey League? Jeff, like that's, if you're Josh Hosang, maybe if you're Josh Hosang's handler, like that's as bad a start to your NHL career as you can have.
I'm glad we don't have that rule at our office.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's as hard as that's as bad as for his reputation as it could have been. And obviously, we've touched what he's done and dealt with in the past, and he's had that reputation as a tough guy to coach. And on day one, we couldn't go to Jerry Seinfeld's apartment and have him set the alarm.
Right. I haven't even heard the excuse yet. But if it's traffic or whatever, you show up your first day of work, you're always, half hour to almost an hour early.
Day at NHL training camp, right. With that reputation, you better be early.
Right, if that's your MO.
You almost wish it were like the Pascal Perez. I got on the highway,
right.
The circular highway, and I
couldn't get off.
Yeah. Hosang. I was having this conversation with Jeff earlier. I mean, I think he's a nice junior player. I'm not even so sure what type of NHL talent he'll be. He's not a very big guy. His skating's not dynamic. Without the controversies, are we talking about him that much? I mean, he was a couple picks away from being a second rounder, but. And not really going to his defense on this, but to put it into context, I think the agent sort of falls down on this count. Agents aren't just there to answer the needs of their clients, their established NHL clients. I think it's also up to them to sort of inform their sense of professional duties and obligations. I'm probably stepping on the toes whizzing on the leg of an agent who will probably not return my call next time. But really, someone should have looked after him and directed him a little more. That this shouldn't have happened.
Well, and it's not like he was going to make that Islanders team either way, right? It was going to be a nice stepping stone for him to attend training camp for as long as they let him attend it, and then probably go back to junior. He gets to go back to junior a little quicker than that. And now the narrative continues, right? It just continues to build. This was already an MO, and the Islanders were trying to dispel that notion, and Garth Snow saying that he's a different kid and there's something there. And, now the other 29 teams that didn't draft Josh Hosang are pointing at that situation and saying, that's exactly why we didn't take him when we had the opportunity. The Montreal Canadiens have a new captain, Max Pacioretty. They're going back-to-back Americans wearing the C in Montreal. Gionta to Max Pacioretty, who's a prolific goal scorer, voted on by the players. What do we make of this, Jeff? I mean, it's he's not a guy that I really knew much about as far as being outspoken, being a leader type, but I guess if the players think he's worthy of that distinction of wearing the C in Montreal, which is a huge deal, and he's got to take some French lessons naturally. I guess if the players think he's a good enough leader, that's good enough for me.
Yeah, and that speaks volumes, because we were going through the roster off between our break there, and there wasn't anyone who really jumped off the page in terms of a guy you'd think as maybe PK Subban. But if the players are voting for him, that speaks volumes about his role in the room. And you really, as you mentioned, you didn't really see that out of him, just the way he speaks. And he struggled a bit with the French in his press conference. But if the players are comfortable with him, why not?
I'm looking forward to going up to Montreal and interviewing him and throwing a couple questions in French at him. Right?
Yeah.
You better keep that recording.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Oh, that was a painful part of the press conference. But I think it was interesting that Canadiens management put it to a vote. I have all kinds of respect for Bergevin as a GM. I think there has been a real sort of top-down culture or management strategy there. In Montreal previously, and that it was sort of Therrien's way, and not the players' way. So, I think that was a pretty bold move on Bergevin's part. Maybe some people will see this as a slagging of PK Subban, but I don't know that that's really the case, and I don't know that PK would really need that sort of attention.
PK gets plenty of attention and some positive attention, as he should, for his recent $10 million donation to a children's hospital. I think PK is not exactly wanting for headlines in this country. He's got plenty of them. Max Pacioretty, the new captain of the Montreal Canadiens. Some interesting news coming out of Vancouver Canucks camp in a Q&A. GM Jim Benning saying he could have traded away Ryan Miller instead of Eddie Lack, who he sent to the Carolina Hurricanes, which is interesting. What'd you make of that, Gare?
Well, I guess as a GM, you know, in your second year, you don't want to give the appearance of having to cover up your mistakes, right? Like you have to want to believe that you did the right thing. And if he had actually moved Miller, that's in fact sort of a tacit admission that you made a mistake in signing him. So I understand it. To my mind, I think Benning is a really shrewd assessor of talent. I have to think that that Ryan Miller has been and will be a better goaltender than Eddie Lack. You know, whether he's better value on the dollar, that's another thing. Benning might have some attachment to Miller going back to Buffalo. It's defensible. But in Vancouver, it's red meat to ardent fans who were in Lack's corner and sort of despaired his trading.
Of note, Daniel Alfredson now transitioning to a front office role. He's an advisor to the Ottawa Senators. Do you see him taking that a little bit further, Gare? Is this step one in maybe a more permanent, more influential role in the NHL somewhere?
Oh, I think he's the future GM of the team. I don't think that there's much doubt about that. And yeah, Daniel Alfredson could run for parliament in any riding in Ottawa and carry it. He was the face of the franchise for a generation in Ottawa. He's never even had a real serious misstep. When he signed with Detroit, it was regarded as the team's failure, less than his.
That was interesting because him and Murray had a little bit of tension there, right?
Yeah. But you know what? It's hard to if you're ever angered at Daniel Alfredson, it won't last. And he's not a guy that would hold a grudge. That was never a break from the organization. In real terms for him, it was, if they had given him a fair opportunity to stay, I think he would have, I think that he had real mixed feelings about doing it, then and now. And you know what? He was in his time, and this is back when I was working in Ottawa, he shaped the culture of that room. He really shaped a whole team full of players. You know, I look at Marian Hossa. Marian Hossa had the benefit of being around Daniel Alfredson, at 19, at 20, and he just followed everything that Daniel Alfredson did in terms of work ethic, in terms of working out, in terms of just carrying himself in the room and all of that. And, Marian Hossa might go to the Hall of Fame just based on, on following the lessons that Daniel Alfredson led him through.
Yeah, Daniel Alfredson's still not winning any ridings in these parts here in Toronto, but yes, in Ottawa, probably could end up as an MPP. The other, we talked a lot about some positive stories in NHL training camps. This is it's certainly not a positive one, and one that's open to discussion, but one that is kind of difficult and delicate in talking about Patrick Kane's arrival in Chicago Blackhawks training camp. We know the accusations. There still has not been a charge, but pretty hefty stuff thrown his way. And there's a grand jury that will take place at some point over an incident with a woman in Western New York. Happened after a meeting at a bar. He took questions. He addressed the media, but obviously, naturally, with legal proceedings ongoing, he's not going to address it too much. But there's been discussion as to whether the Blackhawks should have even invited him to training camp. Again, he hasn't been charged yet. It's not like we're even in a court proceeding yet. We don't know if it'll get that far. It may not. It may. Was it a good idea for the Blackhawks to invite Patrick Kane, Jeff?
It's hard to say. We're not privy to the information that they might have, but I was really, really surprised how they handled the whole Kane press conference and putting him out there. One of the rules I learned when I studied business a little bit from a PR perspective is you never want to make the situation worse than it already is. I think by putting him out there, they could have sent a statement and said they're not going to talk until due process is done or there's more legal information, but to send him out there in front of the media, it just looked bad, and the whole thing went over pretty terribly. From the Blackhawks' perspective, that was really difficult.
I don't think they wanted to seem like they were sheltering him or hiding from something, but I get it, Gary. He's not going to say anything because there's legal ramifications.
Yeah, to follow what Jeff said, in looking at it, you're thinking, how will this make things better? You know, and there's no air clearing. There's nothing that you can really do with a legal proceeding pending. And just in terms of body language and appearances, Kane just, like, short of it being a public shaming ritual, it couldn't have gone worse.
Yeah, it was uncomfortable to watch.
Yeah.
Well, it's an uncomfortable situation, no question. And I don't know how you make it comfortable. But if they don't make him available, is there not the question of, oh, well, I mean, they're trying to hide him. He's got something to hide. I don't know if there's a right move to be made here, frankly. And
no move is better than
a
right move.
That's what I was going to say. Sheltering him is a lot better than what they did.
It almost felt like they put him out there in stocks to take questions,
yeah,
right?
They throw rotten fruits and vegetables at him. So mentioned that he has not received a charge yet. There's no charge been filed against him. And certainly there's a big component of wanting to wait until due process takes place. Is this a different situation? Is it a different decision that should be made by the Blackhawks if he is charged? Like, if there is an actual legal a trial that's on the horizon, should he even be attending training camp if he's in the middle of a trial or awaiting trial? If there is an actual charge that comes down here, Gare, I mean, can he go into a season with the Blackhawks with an actual rape trial hanging over his head?
I think he could. I don't know if he should. I don't know that you can conveniently take a leave of absence from an NHL team that you're under contract to. It is a radioactive situation. The thing is, even if there aren't charges pressed against him, even if this all just goes away, right? I mean, he's such damaged goods. You know, he is a white shirt that a stain will not come out of, right? It's going to be very interesting to see how not just this season unfolds, but the rest of his career unfolds. And I think one of the great problems is in all of this is his past established history.
That's the thing, right?
You know, he had the image as the party boy, as the bad boy, you know, and it just feeds all of this. If it were another player, you know, and you look at other things that are out there in terms of Jarrett Stahl and Mike Richards, right? Would we, you know, if there's a drug trial, with Mike Richards, are we having this conversation if these charges are hanging over him? There's past history and there's also the nature of
the crime.
The crime.
Yeah, it's an ugly situation. Also ugly was the fan reaction when he showed up at training camp. Huge cheers, which I get, right? Like, your fans, you're going to cheer your player, especially a player you feel needs to be boosted in that way. And we don't, again, we don't know what happened. We don't know whether these charges are founded, pending charges. Who knows if he'll even be charged, but it's just an ugly situation all around, and I don't know if it could have been avoided, and who knows if he is charged, how the Chicago Blackhawks address that. When we come back, we'll switch gears, talk a little bit about the first week of the NFL season into week two coming down this weekend, and Peyton Manning, his future as a 40-year-old in the National Football League. It's Sportsnet Magazine Live. Garrett Joyce, Jeff Simmons, Ben Ennis on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This is Free Association with Dave Zarum and J.D. Bunkus.
I am Dave Zarum.
And I'm J.D. Bunkus.
And we are the hosts of Free Association, Sportsnet's weekly NBA and Raptors podcast, in which we have freewheeling discussion on everything relating to the National Basketball Association. Thrilled to be joined by our guest, Masai Ujiri.
One of the league's best enforcers, friend of the show now, Charles Oakley.
On the phone right now, we got Alvin Boogie Williams, Milt Newton, former NCAA champion and the general manager of the Minnesota Timberwolves.
A crack-smoking womanizer who doesn't pay his taxes. That's what's perfect for DC.
And I'd say it's worth every penny if he's going to keep giving entertainment like that.
I'm not with you on that one. Yeah, my boy, but I'm not with you on that one.
All right.
From the first
it's
game.
It's obviously not overblown because we're talking about it now. We only talk about the most relevant stories. So, like I said, a lot of stuff.
Go to sportsnet.ca and click on the Podcast Central logo for the scoop on Free Association and all our shows, as well as links to listen and subscribe.
Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network, Ben Ennis alongside Jeff Simmons, Garrett Joyce. In week two of the NFL season, got underway with a crazy Thursday nighter in Kansas City in Arrowhead. Supposed to be this impossible place to play, except people win there quite often. Especially if you're the Denver Broncos. You do that seemingly every year. Go into that park and you come away with a victory. Not generally in as dramatic a fashion as they did on Thursday, but we'll get into that in just a second. Buffalo Bills, though, I mean, you talk about this area that we're in right now, Toronto, as kind of being a buzz with the Toronto Blue Jays. Good time to be a Bills fan. I mean, it's after 1 week, but you might not. I mean, there haven't been many moments to hang your hat on. This has been we already know this team has a great defense. They already have, I think, by most people's measurements, a championship caliber defense. They had that last year. And by their own admission, they were in quarterback purgatory. Now, who knows? It's week one. But, Jeff, the returns on Tyrod Taylor after 1 week against the Indy Colts is maybe this is the guy. He spent a lot of time as a backup in Baltimore. We know the wheels are there. And he showed off the arm a little bit enough. And I think the key to Bills fans, zero turnovers was the huge point of emphasis for him.
Yeah, he did exactly what they designed for him. They want him to run with his legs. They want him to hit the deep ball, and they want him to not make mistakes. You mentioned the zero turnovers. And the model they're using is what the San Francisco 49ers did with Alex Smith when they went 13-3 a couple years ago. Their offensive coordinator, Greg Roman, he was the coach then. And they want him to just keep the chains moving, hit on those deep plays, and for the rest of the time, don't screw up what we have. Don't run the ball. And he looked really comfortable back there. He hit that perfect deep pass to Percy Harvin, and they didn't even target Sammy Watkins really throughout the whole game, and they still were pretty good on offense.
Well, you look at their skill players, right? Like, they've got LeSean McCoy. They got Sammy Watkins. They got Percy Harvin. There's enough weapons outside of the quarterback on offense that they should be able to score, shouldn't they? Like, is that... could we be looking at a criminally underrated Buffalo Bills team when it's all said and done? And again, it's so easy to overreact after 1 week of the NFL season, but the defense has never been questioned. You just got to score, you know, 21 points a game. You're laughing.
Yeah, I like to see how they do against a better defense. The Colts were pushed around by the Bills. They physically bullied them. Mm-hmm. And Rex Ryan obviously is going to love that. But The Colts are pretty below average defense, and I want to see how they do. And this weekend's a much better test against New England. And they really struggled, the Patriots, in their coverage in the first week against the Steelers. They're not the defense they were the last couple of years.
Yeah, so, it seemed like the Steelers could really run on the Pats.
Yeah, they were soft up front.
Yeah. Like the first possession, they just ran it down their throats. And the Pittsburgh offensive coordinator, whoever he is, he'll remain nameless, runs a trick play, takes them out of field goal range, makes it like second and 25 or something like that.
Yeah, and they don't have Vince Wilfork anymore. And he's been just the staple of that defense for so long.
Yeah.
D'Angelo Williams, who's not a young guy.
I didn't get the buzz that the Pats looked so good in week one. I didn't think that at all.
No, they got the Super Bowl hero, Malcolm Butler, got destroyed by Antonio Brown. They couldn't cover anyone.
Tom Brady did have his touchdown passes, all right? I mean, I think the emphasis for that week one win was on Tom Brady and how he would come out of the chute. And that they did beat a good team in the Pittsburgh Steelers, right?
I felt like the Steelers beat themselves as much as anything.
They didn't cover Gronk on a bunch of plays. And I don't know, given the weapons they have, how do you not cover Gronk? They're blaming the headsets. And
right.
You put two guys on that guy. It'll be fascinating to see how the Bills match up with him.
Well, do they have a shot? I mean, this is the, you know, little brother, big brother matchup of the last decade, right? And the Bills, not even little brother, like forgotten brother. Like brother that you didn't even know you had, who maybe you meet up with at a family reunion 15 years down the line. The Patriots don't care about the Buffalo Bills. Should they care about the Buffalo Bills? At least this year, Gare?
The Bills have done it before in Buffalo. Like, and I mean, you know, they beat New England at the end of last season as well, right? So I don't know. You know what? Where there's Tyrod, for me, there's hope, right? Like it's payback for you know, all the time suffering through JP Losman and all the pretenders.
I think he bagged my groceries at Walmart the other day.
Yeah, well, I hope he hit the bag.
Who had the bigger choke job, the Chiefs or the Giants? Chiefs blew a 7-point lead, gave up 14 points in about 10 seconds, while the Giants shot themselves in the foot and handed the Dallas Cowboys about a minute of extra game time in losing to them on the Sunday nighter. Who's the bigger choke artist, Jeff?
I'm going to go with the Giants still.
Yeah.
To blow a divisional game like that on the road, and it's such a basic decision. It's not like a football can be a complicated game. This is anyone who's ever played Madden before, anyone who knows basic math.
But anyone that's played those games could have done a better job of managing the clock.
That's what I don't understand. And I don't know if it was Eli Manning or the offensive coordinator, Tom. I don't know how you screw that one up.
It's an error of commission.
Yeah.
Right? Like you actually managed your way into that. You know, to whatever extent you could say that the Chiefs sort of called the wrong play and set them up
for
a fall.
They were trying to be conservative, at least.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Although I think the Chiefs' loss is the tougher one for a team to process.
Right.
You know, the Chiefs would have brought in grief counselors, you know, for the next day. Like, I don't know how you get past that. It's a good thing that they've got the long week to manage all that or mentally, psychologically get through all that.
Week one, we were talking about how Peyton Manning appeared to be done. The velocity was down. Couldn't connect on the deep throws. Couldn't really connect on the deep throws last year either, even at the beginning of the year. But yes, end of the year and into the playoffs, certainly it looked like father time had caught up to Peyton Manning. Denver Broncos are 2-0 now. Looked okay against the Chiefs. He had his moments, Jeff. Have the reports of Peyton Manning's demise been overstated?
I definitely think so. And watching the game on Thursday night and watching Manning at the beginning of the game, he looked totally out of sorts. And it sort of reminded me of watching Brett Favre play in, I think his last season was 2010. He just looked finished and it was hard to watch. But in the last drive of the game, this really opened my eyes. They let Peyton Manning run his old offense and they gave him the no-huddle shotgun thing and took him out of this rollout Gary Kubiak thing that really hasn't worked and he's looked uncomfortable. When he ran his own offense, he torched the Chiefs in a tough situation on the road. And it looked easy for him. So if they let him go back and get comfortable again, I don't think he's done yet.
It's hard to gauge exactly where Peyton Manning is, right? Like if you're saying, oh, you know, his arm is done. I mean, the guy's thrown for 70,000 yards, and maybe as many as 10,000 of those yards have been tight spirals, right? You know,
right.
Like, I mean, he's always thrown a wobbly ball. Like, to measure his physical decline, you know, he was never a sprint out guy, right? So, I mean, if results tell you, like, where a player is, he got it done. And you know what? I mean, Gary Kubiak, I guess he falls in with every other football coach in thinking that they can control everything but the weather, and they want to impose their stamp on a team. And I think he did it to the detriment of the talent on hand. He had his system, not to fit the talent that's available, just he had his system and was going to put it on Peyton Manning to run it to Manning and the team's detriment.
And Kubiak runs an offense that has a lot of rollouts and design play actions. That's not how Manning could play, especially at 40 years old. You'd watch him roll out the other night, and it's hard. He's never been a quick guy. And
no.
They got to put an offense in that fits Manning. And that rollout stuff, that's just going to set him up to fail.
I mean, it's almost as if Kubiak was coming in and putting in the wishbone or something like
yeah,
that. Like,
exactly.
It's hard to think of something that would less suit Manning, you know, at any stage of his career, let alone, like, when he's hitting for it.
And that being said, the Broncos are 2-0. When we return, Blue Jays inching their way closer to their first playoff appearance in 22 years and maybe a American League East title. We'll look at what's gone right for the Blue Jays and look ahead to a huge series against the New York Yankees. I feel like there's been a bunch of those in the last couple of weeks. I only feel that way because there has been. Ben Ennis, alongside Jeff Simmons, Gare Joyce, this is Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network, Ben Ennis, alongside Gare Joyce and Jeff Simmons. Blue Jays continue to inch their way closer to the playoffs, and I think it's pretty safe to say that they're in the playoffs at this point. That would be a pretty monumental collapse. Yes, the division race still in question. The Blue Jays continuing to play pretty good baseball. Marcus Stroman's situation is becoming more and more clear. He's been very good in a couple of starts. He gave up the 3-run home run to Brett Gardner at Yankee Stadium in his Blue Jays home debut this season. Outstanding against the Red Sox, which I know early in the season that was not a good offense and maybe not a great litmus test. They got some hitters now. They can put some runs up on you. And he was slicing and dicing them with a bunch of two-seamers. Breaking ball looked good. Jeff, like, that's a no-brainer that he's in your playoff rotation now, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a natural pessimist. I hate to admit it, but I was very skeptical when they brought him up after some of the minor league starts, and his command has been really impressive. He keeps the ball down in the zone, and he's really hitting his spots, and he's got the good power stuff, and the Red Sox have really given the Blue Jays trouble the last couple series. They couldn't touch his ball on Friday night, and he was really commanding the ball well, and if he's pitching like this, there's not even a debate. And I think those were the words of Alex Anthopoulos. If he pitches like he did last year, he's in the playoff rotation. He could be one of the most important players for them.
He has to have exceeded all expectations when they called him up, and especially given his last outing in the minors.
Yeah.
He got shelled, or at least it was no better than indifferent. I was in Florida when he tore up his knee that day, and it was like the team had been visited by the 11th plague.
Yeah.
Right. Like, ugh. It was, there couldn't be a greater sense of foreboding, or, you know, just the idea that this is a star-crossed team. So, it's a great storyline that he's got as far as he has. I mean, he has to, I think at this point, he has to pitch his way out of the rotation, and Mark Burley has to pitch his way in if there's going to be any change.
Well, Burley's the interesting guy because On merit, Marco Estrada has to be in this rotation as well. The guy's fifth in the American League in ERA, which is ridiculous. But Mark Burley's been there, done that, as far as the postseason is concerned. And I know he's been banged up, and it's not just aches and pains, although it is that as well. He did have a cortisone injection. So it's something a little more tangible as far as the injury concerns with him. And yes, a drop in velocity is not that important when you're throwing 83, but it is still noticeable. And it was up a little bit in Mark Burley's last start, and he's been victimized by starting in some National League ballparks, and it's resulted in some shorter outings recently. But how do you balance that, Gare? Because you've got the experience of a Mark Burley, and you've got a guy in Marco Estrada who was actually asked whether he thinks he should be in the playoff rotation and was kind of taken aback by the question. Because, of course, he should be. Like I said, he's fifth in the American League in the ERA. What do you do when you've got to have David Price, R.A. Dickey, and now Marcus Stroman in your playoff rotation? That's three of the four. So it's basically between one guy who's won a World Series but is getting a little longer in the tooth and another guy who's fifth in the American League in ERA but passing innings marks that he's never reached before. How do you balance that?
I think you have to live in the present. You know, it seems a shame, and at some level it would have been unimaginable, you know, just even weeks ago, that a guy with Burley's type of tenure and record and performance over the years is now sort of life or death, you know, reasonably healthy. I mean, you know, to get into the lineup for the postseason. I mean, it's a real bitter irony. You know, I as being one who's old in the tooth myself, I'm sort of rooting for him to get there, but I don't hold out much hope for it.
It's does it come down to matchups, Jeff, when you're looking at maybe a divisional series and who you're playing? Whether you go to Burley or whether you go to Estrada?
Oh, absolutely. If you're playing the Yankees in the ALDS, you're not going to have Mark Burley on there. It just doesn't make sense. But I think these next 2 weeks are really important because Mark Burley looked pretty good, but you want to see how him and Estrada, who was outstanding, pitch against better teams than Atlanta. And there was already some concern regarding Estrada. He's already exceeded his career high in innings by pretty substantial. He's going to have a substantial number there. And his stuff was starting to hang over the plate. You saw he give up a bunch of home runs over his past couple starts, and that's been a concern for him early in his career. He led the league in home runs allowed last year. So these next 2 weeks, you really want to assess both these pitchers before making a decision. And based on what's happened the last month or so, you have to think Estrada. How do you take this guy out? But if not, the worst case, you can use Estrada as a long man out of a bullpen, and that's not a, you don't want to ever imagine you have to use that in the playoffs, but yeah, you got to judge these guys over the next 2 weeks and see who really, then you can really measure a guy like Burley who really struggled before that cortisone shot.
But what if they're both really good? How much weight do you give the playoff experience thing? Like, is that a thing? I don't know. We talk a lot about intangibles and culture change and you know, real just things that you can't really quantify, put a number on. Mm-hmm. But is playoff experience a thing? Because there's not a ton of it on this Blue Jays team.
It's hard to say. And the fourth pitcher might only have one game.
Right.
So can you really put that much of an emphasis on that for just one game? And I think that's why I think it comes down to matchup, too. I think that's a huge factor in it because you've got to really set up for just that one series.
Troy Tulowitzki continues to be absent from this team as he recovers from that broken scapula because Kevin Pillar's chin is made out of iron ore. He went to Boston to see a specialist, and then we're still kind of waiting for a bit better time frame, but it's a wait-and-see thing, and the Blue Jays are going to have him undergo another MRI in the coming days. But so far, so good, Gare, with Gare Joyce and Ryan Goins up the middle.
With Gare Joyce up the middle?
Is that what I said?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, that would be, things would not be so far so good with Cliff Pennington and Ryan Goins up the middle.
Yeah, I thought Pennington has been outstanding, really, in the field. And I mean, what are you looking for? I know that when Tulowitzki came in, everyone was saying, like, just how dynamic you know, he is on offense. But it was tightening up the D that he did, and I don't really see a significant drop-off in the field with Tulowitzki out there and you know, the subs that you bring in.
Yeah, because I think that's the underreported or under-discussed thing. Well, I mean, there was talk about Troy Tulowitzki not being Troy Tulowitzki offensively when he was with the Blue Jays. He had never become the guy who was one of the best, not just offensive shortstops, but offensive players in the National League. Never really seen that for an extended period of time with the Blue Jays. And if you're getting about that from Cliff Pennington, now it's very small sample size, but yeah, I don't know if the defensive drop-off from Troy Tulowitzki to Ryan Goins is all that much, Jeff.
It really isn't. And maybe Tulowitzki has a bit better range,
mm-hmm.
but you saw the kind of play that Goins is capable of in the Wednesday game against Atlanta. He made that crazy good play in the hole from shortstop. And the amazing thing is Goins is hitting pretty well too.
Right. What do we make of that? Is that sustainable?
I think it is. He's changed his bat level,
mm-hmm.
and his approach to the plate has really improved. And he's hitting the ball hard, and there's been a lot of his contact rate is way up. And it seems like his approach isn't. Last year, he just seemed like a total lost cause there.
Mm-hmm.
And if Pennington can hit a little bit, and he had a really good week, you're fine there. You have enough bats throughout the whole lineup. It's not like, unless Encarnacion goes down, there's enough offense you can get by, even if there is a big drop off.
And one of those guys that's come back into his own offensively, Russell Martin, has been better with the bat. Went through a little bit of a dip there when he was banged up. He had some finger issues. He had some leg issues. He's been given a little bit of time off with Josh Tolley being reinserted into the roster and then the expanded rosters in September. But he's given a chance to catch guys he hasn't caught a whole bunch recently in R.A. Dickey and Marco Estrada. And the numbers are pretty significantly different for Estrada when he's being caught by Deonor Navarro and when he's being caught by Russell Martin. Now, maybe that's just circumstance, but they both talked about the chemistry that they've had together and the confidence that Marco Estrada has in throwing whatever Deonor Navarro calls. In the playoffs, you got to go with your best players no matter what. How important is it for the Blue Jays to not just get Russell Martin in with R.A. Dickey before playoff time so he remembers how to catch a knuckleball, but Marco Estrada as well? And could it really throw a wrench into things, Jeff, if Marco Estrada's not as good significantly with Russell Martin here down the stretch?
Of course, because we just mentioned he's kind of fighting for that last playoff spot in the rotation. If you take away from his performance, that's a huge issue. And I think Martin is really a guy to watch because his OPS has been significantly better once he stopped catching Dickey, and his body was really being worn down. He just looks so labored, and now you got to transition back that way. You don't really have a choice, but if it's going to affect Martin, it's something that really might change his offensive, and that's been a huge part of him lately, and he's really spiked. His production has spiked so much since being used out of that role, and Josh Tolley's just not going to be on the playoff roster. It doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't. It seems like a total waste of a roster spot come playoff time if Josh Tolley is there. It is the time of the season here when we're talking about the final couple of weeks of the regular season. And again, if you're a Blue Jay fan and you've watched how the last 22 years have unfolded, you don't want to get too far ahead of yourself. But, I mean, it would take a huge collapse not to be at least in a one-game wildcard playoff spot. But if you're looking at the teams battling to get in, and again, the jockeying now with the Kansas City Royals for the best record in the American League, what's the best matchup for this team, Gare? Because you look at the Yankees and how the Blue Jays have handled them and their final series between the two setting up on Monday through Wednesday, and that will likely totally finish the divisional race conversation, unless, of course, the Yankees sweep and then, okay, maybe we revisit it there down the stretch last week of the season. So you got the Yankees. The Twins are battling. The Astros are in there. The Rangers. The Angels aren't totally dead yet. It's
And then you've got the Royals, who, if they meet them, they wouldn't likely, unless they are that wild card team, meet them until the American League Championship Series. What's the best matchup for this team?
Well, I don't think it's the Rangers. I think that that would be a problem, and they're really, you know, they're really coming together at this point. If they got the Astros, I think that would be the one I'd be most comfortable with. Again, a team that's getting there for the first time, you know, as a group.
But so are the Blue Jays.
Yeah, but you know, like, you've got Price, who's been there before. You know, you've got Martin, who has playoff experience. Like, it just seems like the Astros still have the new car smell.
And what we mentioned, it's been 22 years since the Blue Jays have been in the playoffs, and it's the first go of it with this group. And there will be an aspect, at least from the fans, a little bit of happy to be there. But unlike the Astros, who are a younger team, right? They've been building, and maybe they're a year or two ahead of schedule in their arrival. Blue Jays, they don't have a ton of young players, although they do have young players. But they have David Price. Like, they made the all-in moves, and it's easy to think that you're going to be there every year and you're going to have a shot to win the World Series every year. But how much pressure is there come playoff team, Jeff, for this team to not just show up and give the fans their first playoff appearance in 22 years, but to actually win it all? Like, that's not a conversation we've heard too much in the last week or so, but you stack them up against anybody in the American League. Is there anybody better? Maybe in all of baseball.
And I totally agree with that. And I think if they lost in the first round, I think it would be a massive disappointment.
Yeah.
And it's crazy saying that because they haven't really even been in contention for 22 years. But it's not often you have a chance to win the World Series. And obviously playoffs is a weird sample size and weird. Billy Beane always says the best team never wins. Every metric and every analytic you look at says this team is as good as any team in not only AL and all of baseball. They got the bullpen now. They got depth. They got offense. They got starting pitching. They really should make a run this year. And if they just go down in the first round, as much as it's nice to be there, I think that would be a massive disappointment. People would be left with a bad taste in their mouth.
Billy Beane said that the best team never wins because his team never won.
That's right.
That's true.
It's easy to say it that way.
But a lot of wild card teams make all these runs. And
right.
Cardinals won with 82 wins that one year.
Right. It's whoever's the hottest team
for a month.
It's a small
sample.
Yeah, when you play 162 games, it's easier to say the team that was better over that span is the better team because, I mean, generally, that is the case. Mentioned that Blue Jays are battling it out for the Kansas City with the Kansas City Royals for the top spot in the American League. How important, how much of a priority should they make that, Gare? I mean, say they go down to the final couple of games and they've already clinched the division, but there's still question whether they will have home field throughout the playoffs because the American League won the All-Star game, if you'll recall. Should you, and clearly they're not going to do anything to jeopardize their, say, their rotation come playoff time, but would you make a bit of a concerted effort to go after that top spot in the American League? How much of a priority should it be?
That's why managers get paid the big dollars that they do.
Sure.
You know, I mean, if we're going into the last four games of the season and Russell Martin is dinged up and you're a game behind Kansas City, you know, are you going to sit him down in a situation when you might want him in there if Encarnacion's thumb is acting up again, or, you know, any little nick or bruise for someone else in the lineup, if you're thinking we're okay in the division and we'll take our chances, you know, if we don't catch up to Kansas City, if we're not throwing our best lineup out there, I think it would be more important to show up ready to play rather than having the advantage in a league championship series. And I guess the other thing is, if it's Kansas City that you're behind, you know, who's to say that you're going to be playing Kansas City in the league championship
series?
It's true. Series?
Yeah, it's true, and especially the way the Kansas City Royals have played. But that being said, home field advantage has been a big advantage for the Blue Jays this year, and it is for every team in all of baseball. But the record's significantly better at home, naturally. They've sold out a bunch of games over the last month, and
I know what Rogers would think.
Yes, Rogers would enjoy that extra game at home without question. But I've heard time after time about how different this home crowd is than the home crowds in 92, 93. Like, there's no Winfield wants noise about this group. It's not necessary. Have you noticed that?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, you could go down to the Toronto Public Library, you know, and recreate the atmosphere, you know, in the Jays' run, not just going back to 92, 93, but going back to the 80s. It's almost as if there was more noise at Exhibition Stadium than there was at the Sky Dome. It was, it was funereal, really. There's a lot more excitement, a lot more noise now. I don't know if players really feed off it, you know.
They say they do.
Yeah.
They also give it 110%.
Shouldn't. That's true. And they're always in the best shape of their life.
Yeah. So they say lots of things.
Yeah. So I don't know that in any one, you know, does someone get a ball that he wouldn't if the crowd is, you know, any quieter? I don't get it.
Well, we talk so much about the home crowds for the Toronto Maple Leafs being so corporate, right? Everybody's down below eating their sushi at the beginning of periods. Everybody's wearing a suit and tie. It doesn't seem to be that way for the Blue Jays right now, but this is new. Like, we haven't been here in 20 some odd years. Is this potentially the end of that? I mean, are we going to have the same raucous atmosphere next year for the Toronto Blue Jays, or will it revert to a more corporate thing? Because remember, in 92, 93, it was a slow build, right? It was not just 4 million people showed up in 92. It was crowds continued to build, and there were some playoff runs in the 80s, and they were a known quantity. Like, is it possible that the Blue Jays eventually turn into the Maple Leafs and the crowd does revert to that quiet corporate sushi loving crowd? I love sushi, by the way. But
I think it's hard with a 50,000 seat stadium versus what, 20,000?
Well, it did it in 92, 93.
Yeah, that's true. But
that was part of it, right, Gare? It was corporate.
I don't think it was that it was a corporate seat as the Leafs. I think it's a more accessible ticket. I do think that you get a bigger slice than.
But it was a tough ticket. Like, you couldn't.
Oh, tell
get
me
it.
About it. Yeah. You could get tickets for the second game of the season. And that was the only one that wasn't sold out.
Yeah, it's
sold out before the season started.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I don't think it was really the corporate ticket, even remotely close to what the Leafs, the Leafs were and are. But the Sky Dome was quiet back in those days, I think doesn't reflect who, you know. What type of demographic was buying tickets? It's simply that we're Torontonians, right?
Oh, is that it?
Like,
and the Blue Jays have a younger generation of fans. It seems that way.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like the 20 to 40 have really taken on the Blue Jays the last couple of years.
Yeah, what's with that? Is it because the seed was planted and everybody was, you know, the people of my generation, of your generation, Jeff, I mean, they were aware of 92, 93. And they were just waiting for that moment, the team to be good? Or is that a Toronto thing where everybody's just waiting for the team to be good? Because we've seen it with the Raptors, too. I mean, we've seen it for every playoff run that a Toronto sports team has gone through in this city. Is this, and I mean, to some degree, every North American professional sports city is bandwagon-y, but is this one of the more bandwagon cities in North America when it comes to professional sports?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And you see all these people come out of the woodwork. I've got friends who have never talked to me about the Blue Jays in their whole life. Maybe never even watched a Blue Jay game. And they're texting me every single day. And that's just part of winning. But Toronto, I find, is a lot like that. The Raptors, people are coming out of the woodwork. You've never seen half these people wearing Raptors gear. Now they're all of a sudden have two good years. And everyone's a Raptor fan.
It's true.
And the Leafs, everyone's bagging on the Leafs. But if the Leafs ever got good again, it'd be the exact same thing.
I am interested to see what a home playoff game looks like for this Toronto Blue Jays team. And even what a road playoff game looks like, too. Whether they're going to bring out a big screen and do the Maple Leaf Square thing or what goes down. But it looks like it's going to be a good time. We mentioned Maple Leafs. They are currently in Nova Scotia downing some lobster as training camp is underway. We'll talk about them and their big trade before the season. Michael Grabner acquired from the New York Islanders for the
big
poo-poo platter of non-prospects. That's coming up next. Ben Annis alongside Jeff Simmons, Gare Joyce. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Fans know that Sportsnet.ca has them covered with news, analysis, highlights, and storytelling. But the lineup also includes podcasts. Here's a taste of At the Letters, our Blue Jays podcast. From two guys who would happily wear Gustavo Chacin's cologne. I don't know. It's At the Letters, Sportsnet's Blue Jays podcast with Arden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson-Smith.
They don't necessarily have to realize their potential this year, and I don't think anyone expects them to realize their potential in 2015, but they have to be closer to realizing that potential than they have been so far.
It's At the Letters.
Like, I don't know why anyone would ever want to fire John Gibbons. He's not the problem. He can't make Aaron Sanchez throw strikes. He can't make Daniel Norris find his stuff. Like, that's not... So he can't do that.
It's At the Letters.
It was a different experience, and all the players were saying that it was playing a lot more slowly than what they're used to.
Absolutely. I mean, you talk to guys, and they were immediately like, oh, yeah, it's. I mean, you really got to barrel a ground ball to get out of the infield now. Whereas in years past, you know, we've been around the team for a few years. You talk to pitchers, and they're like, man, like, I'm getting killed on these ground balls that get through on this turf.
It's At the Letters, Sportsnet's Blue Jays podcast. With Arden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson-Smith. Go to sportsnet.ca and click on the Podcast Central logo for the scoop on At the Letters and all our shows, as well as links to listen and subscribe.
Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network. Ben Ennis alongside Gare Joyce and Jeff Simmons. NHL training camps underway across North America, including in Nova Scotia. They're getting their fill of National Hockey League training camps. Maple Leafs out there doing their on-ice workout thing. They had physicals, which took place in Toronto on Thursday, and now in Nova Scotia for a few days before their preseason kicks off with a pair of split squad games against the Senators on Monday. And it's a learning process for us as we understand the new regime of Lou Lamoriello and Mike Babcock. And Gare, apparently the Maple Leafs want to be the Yankees because there's a new code of conduct for the Maple Leafs under Lou Lamoriello, and it has to do with facial hair and head hair, apparently.
No, the Leafs have sort of turned into a Catholic boarding school. I know that Brendan Shanahan went to Michael Power. You know, it's sort of a throwback to that. I mean, listen, Lou was at Providence College before he went to Jersey. And, you know, that's completely consistent with his approach. Not just going back to Jersey, but actually to school days. So, I mean, it's a little weird. I don't know if the Jays if the Leafs are going to have to wear gray pants and blue Leaf Blazers the rest of the season.
That'd be cute.
Well, you don't need to worry about playoff beards.
Yeah, that'd be fine.
Yeah, that won't be called into play for any time soon. But, you know what? It's a weird way to come in and put your stamp on a team. But Lou is a quirky guy. He always has been.
Sure. And the Yankees, like I mentioned, the Yankees do it. And people like that, I guess.
Do the Yankees still do it?
Yeah, you can only have a mustache. Oh, there's no facial hair. And you get no sideburns. Don Mattingly knows that.
Well, you know what happened there is when they had Oscar Gamble, right? And then, like, after Oscar Gamble, then they had to change everything. You don't remember Oscar Gamble.
It's a little bit before
one of the great froze of all time. Like he had an 8-inch fro.
And Doc Ellis played there for a bit. Did he wear the curlers in New York? I just saw that documentary on Netflix, by the way. You got to see it.
Any sort of bad hair baseball search that you do would turn up Oscar Gamble.
Yeah.
So I think that the Yankees went that way. That was just in early Steinbrenner days. So, yeah. You know,
so but
there hasn't been someone, like, has this been an issue with the Leafs before? Like, has there been some sort of super mullet or...
Mikhail Grabowski, I guess, had, like, some long hair. Who had long... Like, nobody has real long hair.
I mean, it is addressing a problem that didn't exist.
Right. I guess it's change for the sake of change, or maybe putting your fist down and saying, hey, I'm the authoritarian here. I'm the disciplinarian. I'm the guy who runs this ship.
I think they just want the players acting like pros and looking like pros.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily agree with the whole thing, but I think that's their perspective.
I'm sure Don Cherry's real happy about it.
Yeah. Well, he always loves the Leafs.
Yes, he is. But Lou Lamoriello, outside of that, has actually made a hockey move as well, acquiring Michael Grabner from the New York Islanders for a five-pack of guys who we expect not to be much. Maybe someone will surprise out of that five, but prospects, but more, people refer to them as non-prospects. They're, in baseball, you would call them organizational players, people to fill out the organization in the minor leagues and maybe some depth at the National Hockey League level. Grabner's a guy who scored 30-plus goals in the National Hockey League. Jeff, like, I have a difficult time looking at that trade and saying anything, but it's win for the Maple Leafs, and I'm not exactly sure what the Islanders got out of it, and not that it's a horrible move for the Islanders because Grabner didn't fit in there, but Michael Grabner scored 30 goals in the National Hockey League, and he's 27 years old.
On first look, yeah, it's totally understandable why some people didn't understand the trade. Well, a rebuilding team's giving up five prospects for a guy with no club control, 1 year left on his deal. But at the same time, when you really look at it and really dig into it, it makes a ton of sense. As Ben mentioned, there's almost no risk to it. Grabner can give you something now at the NHL level, and at the worst case, you can flip him at the deadline and create more assets, maybe more assets than those prospects you already had. At the worst case, maybe you can re-sign Grabner. Maybe he fits into this program. And the other guys, there's really not much there.
You're not a big Matt Finn guy? Carter Verhaeghe, Taylor Beck?
I have all their jerseys.
Right.
No.
I'm a Chris Gibson guy.
Yeah.
I will go out on that limb. I think I saw him play his career game the one time that I saw him.
But goalies are hard to predict, too.
You know what? It's penny stock. Like, it's a roll of the dice, you know? And going out and getting Grabner, though, you know, the one thing I'll say about him, his hair was actually a little long to be a Leaf, right? Like, this might have just been a message to him. He was pretty shaggy when I did an image search on him.
What's his deal? Because I know he was beset by injuries a little bit last year, and he's never been that same player his first year on Long Island, originally drafted by the Vancouver Canucks, but emerged with the Islanders. What's the word on him, Gare?
He would sort of be in the 97th percentile as far as speed goes.
Yeah.
I don't know how much value he gives you in terms of finishing. You know, he like we've said, he had a 30-plus goal season, and he has scored before. Is he – and he's a good penalty killer. What value he gives – sort of beyond that is there's a not much of a physical presence. Is he a possession player? You know, to be determined.
What this also does for the Maple Leafs is it frees up a bunch of contract spots. You can only have 50, and the Maple Leafs now at 45 in your professional organization. So that opens up the possibility of maybe a guy like a Brad Boys or maybe a guy like a Curtis Glencross or Mark Fraser actually making this team, guys on professional tryouts. What's the best course of action here, Jeff? Because so much attention is going to be on the younger players, the William Nylanders, the Mark Leipzigs, the Mitch Marners of the world. But it does seem like the Maple Leafs are setting us up for a season in which it's the veteran guys trying to stick around for another year in the NHL acting as placeholders.
Exactly. It works on a couple levels. One, it's a buy low, so you can maybe flip these guys later. And that's probably the number one reason they made this Grabner trade, was to create room for some of these guys. And if you can turn a Brad Boys, a Curtis Glencross, into more assets, and you're getting them on penny stocks, as Gare mentioned, it's a great move for a team that really needs to build up assets because they don't really have a lot. It also works as you're kind of setting a tone for a new program, so you're going to need some veterans in there to kind of pass along the coach's message. And you got guys who are going to be playing for contracts, and that's when they generally play their best, and that's kind of why this whole thing worked in their favor.
Glenn Cross seems the player most likely to be of value. But, you know, for sure they're going to lock him up. But I think he would command the most value other than Grabner. But, you know, of the guys signed on tryout contracts, he's the guy that I could see being flipped at the deadline and getting a second or
something. Yeah, he was flipped last year and wasn't for nothing.
No, not at all.
And if you can get him to up his performance on he's kind of, maybe he's been humbled a bit. Maybe Brad Boies has been humbled a bit. He's always been able to add some offense.
He may be more than, I'm trying to think of another free agent this offseason, was more punished by a crowded market.
There's no real middle class anymore. It's the top guys get paid.
Yeah.
And then the rest is rookie deals, and guys like Glenn Cross and Boies kind of get lost in the shuffle there. Mm-hmm.
So how many young players are going to be on this team? Because that's what has Maple Leaf fans excited. It's not Curtis Glenn Cross and Maple Leaf fans are grabbing their jerseys or excited to see play when the Maple Leafs open their regular season here. And there's wins are not expected this year. But I think if you polled most Leaf fans, they'd say, hey, well, at least we'll get to see William Nylander and maybe not Mitch Marner this year, but down the road. Is even Nylander playing on this team this year, Gare?
Boy, I mean, I'd want to see what he looks like coming out of the exhibition season, the preseason.
Had a nice highlight reel goal in the rookie tournament.
Yeah, but that's a rookie tournament.
Yeah. He's a talented player, but if you look at how Babcock...
He looked good at last year's rookie tournament.
Yeah, he's a very talented guy, but look at how Babcock managed those young developmental guys in Detroit. They didn't really bring him up until they were ready, and they...
Oh, my God. In Detroit, he would be coming up in four seasons' time.
And that might be the move he takes here. Mm-hmm.
But if you're Nylander, do you get a little, you know, beaten down? Like, in Detroit, the reasoning's pretty obvious. I mean, that's a good team. This is not a good team. It's very possible that William Nylander in training camp and in the preseason outperforms some of these veterans on PTOs. What kind of message is that sending to him if you say, hey, I know you look good and better than Brad Boies, but you're going back to the AHL this season?
Yeah, it's going to be hard to swallow, but that's kind of where they are as an organization. Their number one goal right now is development. If they don't feel he's ready, even if he plays better, they got to take that approach.
So it looks like Nylander and Marner are going to at least be given the opportunity to play center, see whether they can stick. Does that make sense? Especially Marner's the bigger question mark. I think people have come around to the idea that Nylander can probably play center. Gare, do you see both of those guys as National Hockey League center icemen?
Boy, there's a lot of projection there because, physically, Mitch Marner, I don't think, can play center in the NHL this season, and I'd have trouble seeing him doing that next season.
Yeah.
just not a professional physical package at this point. I think it's again to be determined on Nylander. Same deal, right? Would he be better serviced coming in playing wing? Expectations are sort of down a bit. Comes down somewhat to available talent that's out there. Again, evidently, Nylander is a much more physically mature, stronger player coming into this training camp. So, you know, maybe he can show the world.
There's no pressure on this team. And I don't know if I've ever seen
it. I'm feeling more pressure just sitting here.
Yeah, I think there is. Well, there's lots of pressure on you.
Yes.
Because you're being judged. Every word that comes out of your mouth is being judged and analyzed to the nth degree. But, Jeff, you look at the lack of pressure.
They're not analyzing me, right?
No. Everybody knows how lousy you are.
Exactly.
The decision's already been made on you. There's a two-pronged aspect to this. One is they're not expected to win. Two is all the attention's on the Toronto Blue Jays right now. Start the season, and you know, if they have a deep playoff run, there'll be discussions about the Blue Jays offseason, maybe even more so than Maple Leafs regular season right now. Seems like it's a perfect situation for this franchise to be in at its current stage of development.
Yeah, they couldn't have asked for anything more because usually the Blue Jays are completely out of it by now. And everyone's talking about, what are the Leafs going to do this year? People are cheering Go Leafs Go at Blue Jay games. And now it's perfect. There's no pressure on them. They have zero expectations. There's some fans who want them to finish last place, and no one's expecting a playoff spot. You'd have to be crazy.
Is it possible that they surprise, though?
Of course it is. When you have a coach like Mike Babcock who can get the most out of his players, at least that's what people have been saying about him his whole career, it's possible. They have a bunch of hardworking guys who want to impress the new organization. They got a lot of guys playing for contracts. And yeah, it's possible they're one of those 10th place teams that overachieves, but they don't really have a ton of talent.
Don't overlook the fact that there are an awful lot of mediocre teams in the NHL.
That's like, true. And in the Eastern Conference.
Yes, yes. Don't use your measure, the Chicago Blackhawks, right? Use your measure, the Florida Panthers or, Columbus Blue Jackets or whomever you're going to use as a measuring stick. In saying all this, for the Leafs' long-term purposes, I think really the worst award that they could walk away with this year is Mike Babcock winning the Jack Adams. Like,
yeah.
if you're getting recognized for, coaching a under-talented team into overachieving, then that's bad news for the long-term development. You want to get those high picks.
Right. I mean, and that's only part of it, because maybe that changes the expectations going forward to next year, and maybe there's more pressure on this team to make not a quick fix, but a quicker fix, maybe in the offseason, and you give up some of the future for some of the now if things go really, really well this year. I mean, that could throw a wrench into the whole thing, but we'll have to see. It seems like we're putting the cart a little bit ahead of the horse when we haven't even seen them play a preseason game. I'm just saying there will not be a ton of pressure. And maybe some of it lifted off Dion Phaneuf as well. Gare, so much has been made about maybe him having a big bounce-back year under Mike Babcock because he tried to deal for him at the deadline. What do you see out of Dion Phaneuf?
Boy, if you're asking him to do the same job, I'm having trouble seeing how, you recover or rehab him. I think new surroundings rather than a new coach would be a tonic, a possible tonic, not necessarily a guaranteed tonic in turning his fortunes around. But if he's your number one defenseman, I just don't know what how you're really changing the dynamic that much with him.
We'll have to see, and we will be able to see a couple of games. I like this new split squad thing that's happening. Monday, Maple Leafs play their first preseason game, two of them against the Ottawa Senators. That will do it for another edition of Sportsnet Magazine Live. For Jeff Simmons, Gear Joyce, I'm Ben Ennis. This is the Sportsnet Radio Network.